Tucson's only live local news and talk. KVOI Cortero, Tucson's only live local news and talk. 1030 The Voice, a Bustos Media station. Online at KVOI.com.
This is CBS News on the Hour, sponsored by Progressive Insurance.
I'm Monica Ricks. Former President Trump went after the judge in his hush money trial today after a second day of testimony in New York.
I'm not allowed to defend myself, and yet other people are allowed to say whatever they want about me. Very, very unfair.
Trump's comments coming as the judge weighs whether to hold him in contempt for violating a gag order. CBS's Errol Barnett's outside the courthouse.
Discussions this morning about what to do, what decision Judge Juan Merchan may make in punishing Donald Trump for what the prosecution says are some 10 violations of the gag order implemented against him.
Meantime, jurors heard more testimony from former National Enquirer publisher David Pecker. Our Graham Cates has more on that.
He's explaining how this process worked, how they worked to get all these stories that were negative about Trump so that the jury understands Trump's involvement, if there was any, Michael Cohen's involvement, which he's acknowledged before, in this process of fishing out these stories and suppressing them.
Trial resumes on Thursday.
Free Palestine! Free Palestine!
Pro-Palestinian protests are growing at college campuses nationwide now, including NYU, where dozens of people have been arrested. CBS's Meg Oliver's at Columbia.
Columbia has more than doubled its security presence. The NYPD has also stepped up patrols outside. And for the foreseeable future, only students and staff are allowed on campus after scanning their IDs.
The White House is blasting these protests as anti-Semitic and dangerous. The Senate should vote soon on a foreign aid package to get more military funds to Ukraine, Israel, and Taiwan. Banning TikTok is also up for consideration over U.S. privacy concerns. Tech expert Ian Schur.
The challenge is that the government hasn't made its case to the American people about this supposed threat. And so any decision that's made is going to likely get pushback, even though it's a bipartisan bill.
It has been a month now since the Key Bridge collapse in Baltimore, and the Army Corps of Engineers reports progress. Colonel S.T. Pinchason.
We're on track to meet our intermediate milestone of opening a limited access channel by the end of April. And we're still on schedule to open the full federal channel, the full 50-foot channel, by the end of May.
This as the city of Baltimore sues the owner of the cargo ship that crashed and caused the collapse, killing six people. And a hospital in West Virginia has now confirmed the state's first known case of measles in 15 years. Health officials there are still working to pinpoint where that patient caught it, but they did confirm that patient had been recently traveling abroad. This is CBS News.
Sponsored by Progressive Insurance. Protect your home and auto. Save when you bundle. Get a quote at progressive.com. That's progressive.com.
Why do so many dogs suffer from weight issues, skin problems, messy poops, and low energy? It could be the popular dog food you put in their bowl each day.
Cody was sleeping a lot, wasn't playing.
She was very lethargic and not moving around.
Dry kibble just wasn't cutting it.
That's why, after more than 45 years of experience of helping dogs make complete health turnarounds, veterinarian Dr. Marty created Nature's Blend. It's a freeze-dried raw dog food made with wholesome ingredients like premium meats, seeds, vegetables, and fruit. And once dog parents switch their pups to Nature's Blend, the results can be astounding.
She's got her energy back. She's running around like she did like 5 years ago.
Miraculously, she's just feeling all around better. She's like a new dog. Thank you, Dr. Marty.
Get your dog started today and save up to 54% off Nature's Blend. Plus, receive a free pack of our best-selling beef liver dog treats. Go to drmartypets.com/good or text good to 511-511. Text good to 511-511. All dogs are unique. Your dog's results can and will vary. Message and data rates may apply.
The Buckmaster Radio Program is paid for by Buckmaster Communications, LLC. The views expressed are not necessarily those of KVOI, Bill Buckmaster Communications, LLC, or their sponsors.
That's me. Hi, everybody. Bill Buckmaster with you off and running on Tuesday, April 23rd, 2024. My buddy John, engineering and producing. The two of us wish everybody well as we get rolling here. Four segments today, four different guests, a ton of content. In our 14th year with this radio project, coming to you from the Green Things, Zocalo Village Studio, part of the Bustos Media campus where we have five radio stations under one roof. This one's KVOI, 1030, Tucson's most trusted voice, really the only source for live local news and talk on the radio. Worldwide live listening at buckmastershow.com. Our live line for our telephone interviews, we'll be utilizing that a lot today. That's coming from, thank you, Rincon Ventures, real estate and property management sponsors. Our live line, looks like the state of Arizona's got a budget problem. My goodness, a lot of red ink. New forecast showing the state faces nearly a $2 billion shortfall in the current and coming fiscal years, and the governor, Katie Hobbs, says, okay, time for a hiring freeze for new state employees. She's instructed department heads, send her a plan this week to cut $1.2 billion out of that red ink. Let's go now on the live line, Dr. Dave Wells. Always a good guest for us on the Buckmaster Show. Dave is the research director at the nonpartisan, nonprofit Grand Canyon Institute, a think tank, basically, based in Phoenix. Dr. Wells, Dave, how are you?
Oh, I'm doing pretty well.
So what do you think of this? You had a chance to take a quick look at this budget memo from the governor. What's your take on this? How do we suddenly get into all this trouble?
Well, we got into trouble because of the flat tax that was eliminated, our progressive income tax that the legislature passed in 2021 and then phased in. And that's essentially eliminated more than $2 billion in revenue, which would be more than enough to cover the anticipated shortfalls. So that's why we've got the problem. And the governor, is basically, when you put out a thing and you say, oh, make a 2% cut or a 4% cut for the rest of this fiscal year, and the fiscal year goes through June. So a 4% cut on their whole budget between now and over the next like 2.5 months, that's actually a pretty big cut. Those are really serious things. It's hard for people to translate that into what it really means. And that's one of the goals that we have, is trying to help translate budget cuts into actual human catastrophes or costs.
What do you think it really means? What does it mean for all of those that all of us that don't follow all of this closely, these spending pictures?
Well, yeah, I wish I had like the definitive answer for you, but in general, Arizona doesn't staff their state government very well to start with. For years, we've been ranked at the sort of very bottom of essentially state employees per capita. And so, if we're going to be having hiring freezes and other kinds of cuts like that, that means obviously that different people have jobs, actually do things. They don't sit on their butts all day. So that means that there are certain activities that they have been doing that they're not going to get to. So, for instance, I got a little gift earlier today. So I sent out a note for a public information request from the Department of Treasury, and actually I got a response. Next year, for budget cuts, I might have to wait many more months extra to get something like that because they wouldn't be able to process it as well. So, I mean, there are these little things that would sort of add up for people, and they have real consequences for people. And that's one of our objectives with the Grand Canyon Institute, is to try to identify some of these things on top of other things like a housing trust fund. I mean, that's a whole separate thing that needs to have money in it, or money for child care. There's child care that was federal money that was coming in that's spent within the governor's budget for about $100 million, and those are all other kind of costs that we need to really be thinking about as investments in the state. They're part of the broader budget picture as we try to nail out a state budget.
And you guys at the Grand Canyon Institute are closely following the whole vouchers / STOs or ESAs that they're known. Could you how does that play in our state budget woes right now?
So it certainly contributed to it, and that's one of the things we're trying to cost out. So, and to sort of give you an idea, so it's been our general hypothesis that the data is confirmed is that the people using the ESA universal vouchers have been primarily from higher income areas. So the people who are least need the financial help are getting the most help. And it costs the state most directly. So, for instance, give you a couple examples from the Tucson area. I'll use a high income and low income district. So Catalina Foothills has about 5,000 kids, and they have about 400 overall people in ESAs who either had attended that school before or just simply lived in that district. Flowing Wells is about the same number, 5,000 kids. They have about 150 students. So it's 400 versus about 150. And so you can see that the higher income district is using it a lot more. And because Catalina Foothills gets relatively few state aids, but when they use the ESA, they get 100% state aid for that. It costs the general fund a lot more per kid. And those are the kind of things we're working on trying to cost out. And part of the public information request I had was to find out which schools actually were receiving the money. And that was one of the things that I hopefully have just received about an hour ago. So we'll hopefully be diving into that a lot more to help people understand exactly where the money's going and how it's impacting the budget.
So circling back to our a lower income district like Tucson Unified with almost 40,000 students enrolled. Again, Dave Wells, give us the numbers on that particular district as relates to school vouchers.
So overall, Tucson Unified has about 3,400 or 3,500 students who are in the ESA program who reside in the Tucson Unified boundaries. Most of those students, only very small of them, apparently actually attended Tucson Unified. So a lot of them were students that were either in charter schools or in private schools before. And again, that's another large net cost. I mean, it's a little bit harder in Tucson Unified case to actually identify whether these are higher or lower income families because Tucson is a pretty diverse city. But my guess is that those are mostly coming out of the higher income folks in Tucson.
You know, one of the big knocks on the whole voucher thing is the accountability, and we've had Tom Horn on numerous times and asked him about it. We can't seem to really get to the bottom of why there is no accountability to the program. What's your thoughts on that?
Well, we think there should be. I mean, if you're going to give money to charter schools, which are privately owned, but they're public schools, and they charter schools have to follow the state curriculum, and they have to provide financial reporting and all those kind of things. And recently, the state of Maine Supreme Court ruled that their private schools have to follow the same kind of accountability things that their public schools do. And we think that should be the case here. If we're going to actually fund private schools, we ought to be asking for some level of accountability. Currently, there's none. The school itself doesn't even have to be accredited. They can teach whatever they want. Most of these private schools are religiously based, so they are allowed to discriminate on the metrics that religion permits. So if they think it's a sin to be gay and lesbian, they can discriminate against gay and lesbian students, i.e. not allow them in the school, or kick students out if they discover that their parents are gay and lesbian. So those are all things that are challenging things that we think are inherently problematic when the state government funds private schools. But if you're going to fund private schools, we think they should be far more accountable. And we don't even know what they're learning, how well the kids are doing in the schools. Again, those are all basic things, but the Republicans in the legislature have been very resistant to that. So we haven't been able to make much progress. Again, that could potentially be a budget negotiation tool, that if we're going to continue to fund private schools, the governor's office could demand that there be some level of heightened accountability, and we will see where that takes us.
All right, Dr. Dave Wells, research director at the nonprofit, nonpartisan Grand Canyon Institute. Their website's grandcanyoninstitute.org. And quickly, your organization put out a news release yesterday. The Phoenix Coyotes, they were originally the Phoenix Coyotes, and they expanded it to Arizona Coyotes of the National Hockey League, have decided we don't want to play in a 5,000-seat arena at ASU, so they're going to move to Salt Lake City. Bottom line, pretty not much of an economic impact for the Phoenix metro area.
Yeah, it's I've estimated on the high end at 0.004%, which is about $17 million, about 100 jobs or so. Yeah, it's really, really small impact. And then you, in Tucson, you got to watch out to see if they don't steal the Roadrunners up
yeah.
there in Phoenix.
Yeah. So. Well, they last I heard they may split their games at least next year between Tucson and Phoenix, but who knows. Dave Wells, always a pleasure from the Grand Canyon Institute. Thanks, Dave.
Glad to join you. Thank you.
All right, Dr. Dave Wells, Grand Canyon Institute up in the Valley of the Sun. Well, we'll go from Phoenix to the southeastern European country of Montenegro, where our financial consultant Shelley Fishman is standing by right after we talk about Mona's Danish Bakery and then take a break. I was up at Mona's with a friend, had lunch Sunday. My friend had the hot roast beef and looked really good. And then I had the hot turkey sandwich. John on the other side of the glass is hungry and would love one right now. Had mine on the sourdough toast. Really good. Really nice product. The lunch, we don't probably talk enough about it at Mona's. Of course, Mona's is home of the Danish Kringle, northeast corner of Swan and Sunrise. And, of course, they now offer alcoholic beverages with your meal if you are so inclined. Mona'sDanishBakery.com. Be right back. Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com. Buckmaster Show listeners know that I'm passionate about travel. When I'm ready to take off on a new adventure, my air travel begins and ends at Tucson International Airport. TUS is nonstop for our community and Southern Arizona. So remember, to fly local, fly Tucson. Tucson International is nonstop for Tucson. More at flytucson.com.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
The Regional Transportation Authority's 20-year plan includes roadway, transit, pedestrian, bicycle, and many other transportation improvements across the region. Pima County voters approved the plan in 2006, and the RTA is finalizing a new 20-year plan for RTA board review and approval to seek public feedback on the draft plan. Sign up at rtanext.com for updates.
Hi, this is Irene Coppola, President and CEO of the Better Business Bureau serving Southern Arizona. The BBB sets the standards for marketplace trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. The BBB is the resource to turn to for the objective, unbiased information on businesses offering national and local consumer services online and in person. Learn more about the many services offered by the Better Business Bureau at bbb.org.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
Shelley Fishman is a financial advisor and business consultant in Tucson, Arizona. Contact Shelley via buckmastershow.com or directly via email,
at saf824@earthlink.net.
And let's contact Shelley, go all the way to the country, the southeastern European country of Montenegro. Shelley Fishman in week number two of Shelley's well-deserved vacation. Hey, Shelley, how are you at about, what, 10:20 in the evening over there?
Well, actually, we lost an hour moving from Greece up the Adriatic, so we're only 9 hours.
Oh, very good. So it's only about 9:20 in the evening. How's the trip is the trip going 1 week in?
Well, it started raining today, and it's going to rain for a couple of days, but it's this wonderful trip to places that I've never been and probably would never go to if I was just looking at major airports. But we left Kronos in Greece yesterday and started going north on the Adriatic, and at some point we hung a right turn into a 17-mile inlet that links the Adriatic to the heart of Montenegro. It's a port called Kotor. You think you're in Bergen, Norway, because you're surrounded by mountains on both sides. You think you're in a fjord. And in fact, this is kind of referred to as the southmost fjord in Europe.
Wow. I know that Montenegro was folks familiar with the James Bond series. The remake of Casino Royale was filmed partly there in Montenegro. So it's a very scenic country, a small country. And is it part of the European Union, Shelley?
It is not yet. It is part of NATO, interestingly, and it does use the euro. In 2006, it became independent and struck up a deal with Germany to use the mark. And then when the Germans switched to the euro, Montenegro switched to the euro as well. So it's really strange. It was part of Yugoslavia. Prior to that, it had been part of the Austro-Hungarian Empire. It's this very scenic area, very, very small by, you know, country standards, absolutely gorgeous. And, in some ways, its gorgeousness is its downfall because its primary economic drivers are all linked to the gorgeousness. They're linked to tourism and the money that comes in from tourism.
You know, when you look at the EU members, and you will be in and out of kind of EU countries on this trip, there are all sorts of unintended consequences on some of the policies implemented in these places, isn't there?
Yeah, and that's what's becoming clearer and clearer to me as this trip has taken me through mostly agricultural countries. I mean, they're certainly industrialized. They're what we used to call first world countries, but they don't have the kind of industrial base that, say, a Germany or a France or even an Italy has. And when we got into the Great Recession in 2006, 2007, the Europeans were looking for ways to drive income into their countries, mostly Spain, Portugal, to some extent Italy, certainly Greece. And what they did was they said, look, if you come here and invest about €500 million in real estate, we'll give you a 5-year visa and you can come here and stay. That sounded like a pretty good way to increase the tax base in these countries because some, you know, rich people, a lot of Russians, a lot of Brits, some Americans decided to invest in real estate in these countries and to come and spend part of the year here. That was great for a while, except, you know, guess what the bottom price for a house in Greece is now?
I have no idea, but you're going to tell me.
About 500,000 euros.
How much?
What it did. About 500,000 euros.
For the...
What it did is it took that number and it made it the floor for buying real estate in these countries. It was an unintended consequence. So initially, the objective of increasing the tax base was met, but unfortunately for the people who live here all the time, not just visiting, they could no longer afford to buy homes. And whether those homes were apartments or, you know, one-family homes, etc., they got priced out of the market. So for a while, it seemed to be working, and then this unintended consequence set in, and now we have people who are making, you know, the average living in Greece is probably 40 or 50,000 euros a year for family. Here in Montenegro, it's a lot less than that. But people can no longer afford homes. And those people who can buy smaller apartments, you know, one or two bedroom apartments, guess what they're being renovated and used for?
Somehow related to tourism. Do I dare? Airbnbs, maybe?
Exactly right. So those apartments that might be affordable because, you know, nobody would pay a half a billion euros for them are being used for short-term rentals. So the nice thing, when you drive through some of the neighborhoods that 20 years ago may have been not necessarily places you'd want to be, now they are places you want to be, except nobody can afford. If you live in that country, if you earn a living in that country, you can't afford to live there.
Hmm. So, Shelley, I wanted to ask you about getting back to the trip. You've been on a cruise. How are things doing tourism-wise? Things going very well, I imagine. I bet pretty much every space is accounted for on your ship.
Well, you know, and that surprised me. I didn't think that tourism down here would be that, you know, that popular. But the ship is absolutely sold out. It's interesting. I'm not going to mention the cruise line, but it holds about 500 staterooms. So it's not a very large ship as ocean liners go. About 1,000 guests, and it's sold out. So when we joined the cruise in Istanbul, it was the end of one section of the cruise and the beginning of another 7-day section. And, you know, 400 or 500 people got off and 400 or 500 people got on. And then, you know, we wound up in Athens and 400 or 500 people got off and 400 or 500 people got on. And we wind up this section in Venice, and guess what's going to happen?
People are going to get on, and people are going to get off.
And the darn thing is just about sold out. And when we toured, and because, you know, the cruises where they take you ashore, it's very commercial. It's nice. It's nice to see places you wouldn't necessarily see, but it's very commercial and it's very touristy. And the places are jammed. Just speaking for Montenegro, for instance, the whole economic basis for this country is tourism or tourism related. But, you know, there isn't a 4-lane highway in the country. It's all 1 lane in each direction. And you can imagine what happens when you get a bunch of construction trucks backed up by tourist buses. I mean, you know, we have 35 buses following this ship around, to satisfy the needs of the people who get off and, you know, want to have a drink in a cafe. It's wonderful in some ways, but it's driving the economies that could probably do better long term if they emphasized some of the things that they would do well as countries. It's driving them toward the relatively easy end objective of tourism.
So Montenegro, being the traveler that I am, it looks very tempting. I'm wondering if it's a pretty good tourism. Have you had a kind of a feel for it? Does it seem like it might be a pretty good buy for American tourists?
It's very crowded, and we're not even in season yet. Our ship was the only ship in the port today. There will be three ships tomorrow. We had about a 35-minute drive to one of the small towns where you talk about some of the movies that have been shot here.
Yes.
And it was about a 35-minute drive out in the morning and literally 2 hours to get back. So you just get involved with all the construction you see on the way is tourist-related. So there's hotels, they're spectacular, they're gorgeous. The beaches are gorgeous, the mountains are gorgeous. It couldn't be more beautiful, and yet I just have the feeling, and this is just me talking, Bill, but I just have the feeling that there's an impermanence about it.
Yeah.
That you know, any day it could go south, and with it the economy, and you know, there's no backup. I mean, olive oil is the backup, literally.
All right. I bet the olive oil is really good. But anyway, Shelley, we got to run, and we'll be talking to you next Tuesday from where, real quickly?
Next Tuesday, we'll be in Venice.
Okay.
So we know what to expect there.
Yes, okay. Shelley, thanks. Have a great week. Thank you.
You too, Bill. Thank you.
CBS News Special Report. Still no decision from a judge on whether to hold former President Trump in contempt for violating a gag order in his hush money trial. Trump calls it unfair.
They can talk about me, they can say whatever they want, they can lie, but I'm not allowed to say anything.
Prosecutors say he's violated that order at least 10 times. As for testimony today, CBS's Errol Barnett reports David Pecker was back on the stand.
The jury now hearing this testimony is seeing that Trump and Pecker's relationship in media goes back decades, and they've had a mutually beneficial relationship. For the prosecution, this lays the groundwork to fill in the gaps and the motivation as to why Mr. Trump would want to suppress negative stories through this hush money payment and catch and kill policy as he was ascending to the presidency in 2015 and 2016.
The scheme involved that payment to Stormy Daniels to silence her about an affair with Trump. CBS News Special Report. I'm Monica Ricks.
Dine in or take out authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza at Vero Amore, where every flavorful pizza, pasta, and panini are homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. Vero Amore, Plaza Palomino at Swan and Fort Lowell, and on Dove Mountain in Marana. Plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore, on the web at veroamorepizza.com. For more than a half century, Tucson Gardeners Trust Green Things, a family-owned and operated retail and wholesale plant nursery, offering an amazing variety of plants, trees, cacti, pottery, and so much more, all at great prices. The 13.5-acre site by the Rieto River is also home to the Zocalo Village, specializing in fine Mexican and Latin American imported furniture and art. Green Things open daily at 3384 East River Road and at greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
Cushman & Wakefield Picor is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield Picor offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at picor.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's picor.com. Call us at 748-7100.
The Friends of Pima Animal Care Center is the nonprofit partner to our Pima County Animal Shelter. We grant critically needed resources to PACC so that it can continue the amazing life-saving progress it has made in recent years. Your generosity helps us find homes for abused, neglected, and abandoned animals at PAC. Learn how you can help at friendsofpacc.org. www.pimaanimalcarecenter.org.
This is Bill Buckmaster urging my listeners to join me in becoming a member of the Reed Park Zoo, one of America's top zoos and home to more than 300 animals from all over the world. When you become a zoo member, you receive free daytime admission, discounts on special events and education programs, and so much more. Find out more about zoo membership and everything you need to know about your zoo visit, reedparkzoo.org.
Are you ready to immerse yourself in a diverse culture while wandering through bustling markets, sampling exotic cuisines, or forging connections with people from all walks of life? Well, Bon Voyage Travel is here to plan your perfect journey. Whether you're setting off on a solo expedition, embarking on a group adventure, or simply dreaming of far-off destinations, we can help create your custom experience. The road ahead is filled with endless possibilities. Visit bvtravel.com to find your specialized Bon Voyage Travel advisor today.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show midway through our Tuesday edition. Only one more Tuesday in April already. Where is this year going? Whoop. 4 months almost gone. The Buckmaster Show and the Green Things, Zocalo Village Studios. We love green things. Saw Jan and Jack, the owners, up at Mona's on Sunday. And they said things are going very well. A lot of Buckmaster Show listeners dropping by and asking about what would do very well now as we transition in. Yeah, the hot weather's coming. No surprise. Hit 95 degrees yesterday for the first time in 2024. And that is right on schedule, I think maybe a day or two. So that's pretty good news there. But the plants are very happy over at Green Things. The folks over there will point you in the right direction, then walk you to the place on the property, the 13 acres, where you can get just what you need. They're at 3384 East River Road by the Rito River, greenthingsaz.com. Their sister business on site is Zocalo Village. Their website, zocalovillage.com. Green Things and Zocalo Village open daily. That business is, as we say, the folks there didn't get off the bus yesterday. 52nd or maybe 53rd year that Green Things has been in business. When we do our telephone interviews, and we are utilizing the live line a lot today, that's brought to us by our friends at Rincon Ventures, Real Estate and Property Management. Speaking of real estate, I keep noticing all these huge buildings going up out by the airport, these huge warehouses. So I wanted to find out what's going on. So joining us on the live line is Jesse Bloom, Jesse, industrial property specialist for our friends, a great sponsor, PICOR, Commercial Real Estate Services. Hey, Jesse, how are you?
Hey there. Good afternoon. I'm doing pretty well. How are you, Bill?
Doing well. So I'm seeing all this development out by the airport, and what's going on out there? And then I had a friend who was saying, yeah, there's a lot of these big warehouses also going up on the northwest side. Kind of, Jesse, fill us in. What's going on?
Sure. Sure. Absolutely. Yes. You'll notice some big buildings going up airport area, northwest area. The biggest of those projects is a single developer. Their name is Flint, a Midwest developer that came to Tucson looking to capitalize on the speculative development market and sort of lack of inventory that Tucson had seen. So in the airport in particular, there are a project of three buildings totaling about 900,000 square feet.
Wow.
So, you know, roughly equally divided. You know, buildings have some nuances, but about 300,000 square foot apiece. Built totally speculatively, so built without a tenant. And the idea being that the lack of supply and the sort of increase in demand that had been precipitated by many things, in-migration and kind of growth of e-commerce, and then, of course, COVID. The theory being that if you build it, they will come, and they'd fill it with some tenants and ultimately make a profit out there.
Those are huge warehouses, right?
You know, they are. I suppose it's relative. For Tucson and the history of what you've seen here, huge would certainly be an accurate depiction. you kind of compare it to maybe some more typical industrial markets, or more core would be a better word, industrial market, or industrial markets across the nation, they probably wouldn't be considered all that big. But again, for Tucson, we're sort of moving into a little bit more of a new territory. We're seeing a lot more capital investment on a at a larger scale. You're seeing REITs, you're seeing funds interested in what Tucson has to offer, whereas in the past it was predominantly sort of high net worth folks or folks with a tie to Tucson and access to capital.
And for folks that don't know what REITs, that's real estate. What is that, Jesse?
Sure. Yeah, a real estate investment trust. So a pool of funds, so to speak, you know, often can be $30-40 million up to, you know, $1 billion plus. And kind of earmarked for specific types of investments. So you get an industrial distribution type REIT. And so they've kind of pooled some funds together that will go around and identify opportunities to buy or develop industrial buildings.
So you mentioned this group out of the Midwest with three big buildings up of the airport. How about up in the Oro Valley, up in the Northwest Corridor there off of the interstate? Is that also speculative, Jesse Bloom?
Yes, yes. So not Oro Valley, and that's kind of an important distinction.
Okay.
This kind of project wouldn't really pencil in Oro Valley. I'm not sure that the bureaucracy in Oro Valley would allow for that type of... You know, kind of the land dictates what you can do with it. If it's expensive land and you can build apartments or retail, that's what you do. You know, industrial tends to focus on less expensive land. So this project you're referencing is in Marana and is in an area, Tangerine and Interstate 10, that had been sort of dormant, for lack of a better term, for many years. However, an absolutely wonderful industrial area, in my opinion. This location has infrastructure that had been developed and so was ready to be built. Marana has a lot of land, but it doesn't necessarily have a lot of ready-to-be-built land. So the project out there is the same developer, Flint. They built two buildings out there in their phase one development. Again, about 900,000 square feet, 475,000 in one building, and I think 500,000 or so in the other building. So I guess a little over 900,000 square feet. Difference here in what they built at the airport would be the type of building. These are both industrial distribution buildings. The airport project is what I would call very typical for Tucson, meaning loading in the rear and glass storefront, sort of entry in the front.
Mm.
The stuff or the product they built over at Tangerine and I-10 is kind of like a haymaker. They really went big. So instead of buildings that could be demised down because you kind of could cut it down laterally with the loading in the rear, they built cross-dock facilities, meaning loading in the front and rear. They mentioned the smaller building still being 470,000 square feet or so. The ability to demise that down to accommodate smaller users is much more challenging or not really viable. So while the airport facility kind of delivered on the building, on the business plan, meaning it's leased up and is stable, the project at Tangerine and I-10 remains vacant for now. And I think the biggest reason for that is the type of product. That crosslock had not been tried in Tucson. It didn't have a track record to sort of go off of. And so at this point in time, they've yet to land a tenant, but I do think they'll ultimately fill that facility.
That's one of the reasons I do my radio show, is to learn something. I had no idea about, you know, you think of these warehouses, you think about Amazon, but there's obviously these buildings being built on spec. Jesse Bloom of PICOR, who are they aiming at? What kind of tenants are they looking for?
Yeah, so when you do build on spec, you do your best to be as generic as possible. You don't get very specific on your build out. You want to make a blank shell to accommodate as many potential uses as possible. So one big driver of industrial distribution over the last several years is e-commerce, which I'm sure is not a big surprise, right? Precipitated
right.
or perpetuated
right.
rather by COVID. You had a lot more items being purchased online, and then you had a lot more folks purchasing items online, particularly older folks that were a little reticent to purchase online in the past were sort of forced to a degree during COVID. And so all that stuff's got to come somewhere and comes from distribution warehouses. So you would think you're going to buy a set of nails from Home Depot for a project. You drive into the store, you go online and buy it. And so Home Depot needs a warehouse to give you that stuff.
Yeah.
FedEx, UPS, you know, the third party sort of distribution arm will occupy distribution type spaces. You certainly get the Amazon and Walmarts and things of that nature. You'll also get smaller businesses that maybe you haven't heard of. For instance, one of the Flint building users at the airport is a group called MicroStar International, and they deliver or rent kegs to microbreweries across the country. So these kegs come in, they clean them, they refurbish them if they need something, they get stacked on a pallet and sent back out to be used.
Wow.
So all kinds of different uses. Yeah,
wow.
Very interesting.
Anyway, it is very interesting, and I'm glad we had you on, Jesse. There's a lot going on. And to kind of summarize here, industrial, that sector of the commercial real estate scene, I wanted to bring you on because I think it's kind of considered the most healthy right now on the whole commercial scene. Is that an accurate portrayal?
Yeah, it is, I think. There are a couple of bright spots and a couple of challenging spots. Obviously, the office sector is going through a little bit of a renaissance in a tough way. Industrial remains a darling, so to speak. We've got a lot of demand for industrial space, particularly as some shifting away from traditional brick and mortar retail goes into it. But there is a huge push for onshoring or nearshoring. When the supply chain was disrupted and remains disrupted, a lot of that was due to, you know, policies in countries we don't control. So they shut down a factory in China and we can't get our stuff.
That's right.
So a lot of light assembly and things of that nature will be coming back to the States, and they're going to need industrial facilities, light, you know, assembly and manufacturing facilities. So industrial's got a long runway. It remains a darling. Of course, the debt markets are a little challenged right now. Interest rates are high. Construction's high. So we do have our headwinds. But Tucson's got a lot of demand.
Jesse Bloom, a pleasure. Thank you, Jesse, industrial property specialist for PICOR Commercial Real Estate Services. Thanks, Jesse. Have a great afternoon.
Thank you. You as well, Bill.
All right. Jesse Bloom from PICOR. Up next, our historian, Ken Scoville, talking about the infamous Butterfield Overland Mail route that came through Tucson. Be right back.
Noble Hops is Tucson's original gastropub, serving an ever-changing menu of craft beer and fine fare. Savor the majestic mountain views from the perfect for any season spacious patio at West Lambert Lane and North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley. Order in or take out at Noble Hops, a pub for foodies. On the web at noblehops.com.
Tucson International Airport, we are nonstop for our community. Our main priorities are providing a safe and secure travel experience and excellent customer service. We're also nonstop for landing prosperity in Southern Arizona by attracting new flights for business travel and family getaways. When your airport thrives, our community thrives. So fly local, fly TUS. Tucson International Airport is nonstop for Tucson.
The Regional Transportation Authority plan is funded by a voter-approved half-cent sales tax. The RTA is the largest annual funder of regional transportation improvements in the region, averaging more than $100 million in tax revenue each year. The RTA is preparing a new 20-year plan for public review prior to a May 2025 election. Sign up at rtanext.com for updates.
Family-owned and run since 1985, Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is the gold standard for quality and professionalism for picture framing, custom frame mirrors, art for your walls, and hanging and lighting solutions. Come in for your design session or set it up electronically. Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, Fort Lowell and Dodge, and now doing e-commerce at moesgallery.com.
Nestled in the foothills of the Santa Rita Mountains of southeastern Arizona is Equine Voices and Sanctuary. Home to horses and burros that were rescued from neglect, abuse, abandonment, and slaughter. Please consider Equine Voices Rescue and Sanctuary with a financial gift of support and estate remembrance. Learn more about our vision and values at equinevoices.org. The nonprofit Tucson Wildlife Center has been helping injured, sick, and orphan wildlife in southern Arizona since 1999. They're dedicated to the rescue, medical care, and rehabilitation of sick, injured, and orphan wildlife, with the goal of releasing them back to their natural habitat. Around 5,000 animals a year come to them, as they are the only wildlife rescue in southern Arizona. All made possible through donations. They receive no government funding. Please donate at TucsonWildlife.com.
Welcome back. It's Buckmaster on a Tuesday. Good weekend coming up to do a trip over to Silver City, about 3 hours. Not a bad drive at all, east of Tucson. Basically, I-10, take a left at Lordsburg, then start climbing up into the mountains, 5,000 to 7,000 feet elevation. Pretty area of the Land of Enchantment. Start your planning by visiting southwestnewmexico.org. There you will find all sorts of tempting outdoor activities, great places to stay, and great places to eat. Some wonderful New Mexican restaurants in historic downtown Silver City. Speaking of history, in 1857, businessman and transportation entrepreneur John Butterfield was awarded a contract to establish an overland mail route in the southwest United States. I want to hear more about this because the Butterfield Overland National Historic Trail is now official from the U.S. Park National Park Service. Let's bring in our historian, Ken Scoville. Hey, Ken.
Hi, Bill. I thought we'd talk about, like, when we emailed back and forth, the Butterfield thing is really happening. And I've known about our stage stop location in Tucson, but I've already met with groups from around the state, and we're all networking, even with the people all across the country. It's just amazing. If you think about it, this was a 3,300-mile route, and just imagine trying to work out all the stations and all the details and then trying to have people go 100 miles a day on the stages.
Yeah, for some reason, I think when I think of the Butterfield route, I don't think of like it was this like coast to coast. I always think it was just a regional southwestern deal.
No, it actually it was mainly starting in St. Louis. I think there was one other town along the Mississippi River, but mainly in St. Louis, all the way to San Francisco in 25 days.
What?
Yeah. Yeah, and just imagine, I mean, they just changed teams and horses, and then you tried to get, Elsa, it was first priority was mail, but then it also took passengers and a little bit of freight, but they didn't have, but I've read a few accounts of people that came in on the stage in the Tucson, and they said they were just at the state of delirium, and they just crashed in some house and had to just lay flat on the ground for 2 days, because you didn't sleep for days.
Oh my gosh! Well, how well do we know this route, at least here locally?
Well, I've known because I'm a person that sort of I know where all the old locations were, so I've known for a long time. And we can get really pretty darn close. Everybody's curious. I'll tell you approximately where the Butterfield stage stop was, and I did send you a little map. But yeah. If you go down to City Hall and get on the west side of City Hall, and just about 50 feet out from that final foundation, there's sort of a terrace out there, about 50 feet out, Homer Teal, who's a very well-known and very astute archaeologist in town, he did a dig, and oh gosh, maybe 10 or 15 years ago, and he found a blacksmith shop. Here's something else you might be aware of. There was a blacksmith shop there in the 1860s, and they were using a meteorite for an anvil.
I've heard about this, yeah. Go ahead.
That's the Ring meteorite.
Yeah.
Well, right across the street and then a little farther to the west would have been the Butterfield stage stop. So we have a really good verified alignment. It's amazing that they found the blacksmith shop, because you think there's the high rise of the city hall, but they did not disturb the ground like 50 feet away. So they actually found the resources and verified pretty close that this is a blacksmith shop. And in one of the earliest streets in Tucson that was actually west of the Calle Real, the King's Highway that connected Mexico to California, was Pearl Street. Mm. And the stage stop was on Pearl Street, pretty close to what is modern-day Alameda, but it dropped farther south. That's where the federal building parking lot is. And unfortunately, during urban renewal, they put an underground parking garage there. So there is nothing left of the stage stop.
Mm. Are there other stage stops, though, in southern Arizona that you know of?
Oh, yes, there's several. One, well, I guess near Dragoon Springs, Cienega Creek, several. And then you get down into Cotija's stronghold and down through that whole area. And it seems to be, and I'm pretty knowledgeable on Tucson, but you get into the other areas. It's interesting. It seems like the Chiricahua Apaches weren't that upset by the Overland stage. I guess some people think, they said, oh, that's not many people, we're not worried. But they didn't know more people would be showing up. But yeah, they had to circumvent all the, you know, different native people and how they felt about someone coming across here. But I've read accounts that are just crazy about people taking the stage out here. But if you were an adventuresome sort, and I think a ticket would be like $500 in today's money.
Oh, really?
But if you ever seen, there's a Concord, I think it was a Concord stage. There's one at the Historical Society. And if you've ever gotten in there, you would think, oh, what a miserable thing to ride on. There's no shock absorbers. There's nothing.
Oh, my gosh. And so the Butterfield didn't last long because America was at war. Our Civil War began in 1861.
Right. So it was essentially about a three-year deal. And then after the Civil War, and we had troops in here, and it got more complicated because Arizona sided with the Confederacy for a couple months. Mm. So we were part of the Confederate States for a very short time. But Lincoln was really concerned the West might go for the Confederacy because of all the gold and mineral wealth, and that we might the South might hire mercenaries. So they got troops out here real quick to get Tucson back under Union control. But no, the Butterfield was just a grand adventure of trying, and it was the first real connection to deliver mail across the country. Even though they had passengers, it was still an overland mail route. Hmm. But and using horses a lot of the time, but they did reference that in the desert regions, mules got to do it, and mules would obviously be slower.
Yeah, yeah, wow. And again, the total time it would take, if you boarded one of these stage, sitting on a board, basically, oh, I can't imagine. If you boarded in St. Louis and you went all the way to San Francisco, it would take how long?
25 days, so a little over 3 weeks.
That's not bad.
Well, but you didn't. They had food there, and you had to pay extra for the food. And then you can imagine the cuisine was not really great.
Oh.
But anyway, it was day and night. So you had to just try and sleep on the stagecoach.
Yeah, and I guess they would make pit stops along the way.
Well, yeah, but you had to make sure you were ready at the pit stop.
Yeah. So. Wow.
it's a real good thing for Tucson, because that area, I think, needs to be really more marked and interpreted. In fact, the group I'm working with, we're trying to do something, what would I call this? Sort of a digital recreation of what the street was like.
Yeah.
So I'm involved with a group that's trying to do a digital interpretation that they're working on for certain areas. But our first, besides the blacksmith shop, the Butterfield stage stop, our first hotel in Tucson, The Cosmopolitan was on that same street.
Really?
And the other thing, but the best thing is, and I should plug this Sunday, the El Presidio Historic District is having a home tour. I think it's 11 to 4. But once you get into El Presidio, you see the original alignment of the Camino Real and two of our earliest row houses, Hiram Stevens' house and Sam Hughes' house. The family home, I'm giving you a lot quick, but
real
the family
quickly.
Home of the Santa Cruz family was the one that they ended up leasing for the Butterfield. Both those girls that grew up in that whole area married Anglos, and both of those houses are still existing in El Presidio today.
Ken Scoville, always a pleasure. Thanks, Ken.
Thank you. Bye.
Hope everybody has a great day.